The views expressed on the Making It Matter podcast are that of Gunnar Esiason, Julia Ray, and guests, and not necessarily those of the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Nothing in the Making It Matter podcast should be considered medical advice. Such advice can only be given by a physician who is experienced with cystic fibrosis. The Boomer Esiason Foundation, Gunnar Esiason, Julia Ray, and guests cannot be held responsible for any damage which may result from using the information on this podcast without the permission of your medical doctor. You're listening to the Making It Matter podcast with Gunnar Esiason and Julia Ray, presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation and GunnarEsiason.com.
Hey there, it's Gunnar Esiason, and thanks for joining Julia and I for episode 44 of the Making It Matter podcast, International Travel with CF.
Hi, everyone. Making It Matter is a weekly podcast presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation and GunnarEsiason.com, highlighting the challenges that people with CF face and the people who face them.
Since Julia, our guest, and I all have cystic fibrosis, we're made compliant with the National Cystic Fibrosis Guidelines regarding patient interaction and cross-infection by recording via Skype. This podcast was made possible by Novartis, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, and the Digital Credit Union. So big thanks to them for always supporting BEF educational initiatives. All right, so I'm super excited for today's podcast because we get to meet Rachel Russell. She's 22 years old, living with CF. She lives in Buffalo and recently just graduated from college. And even more recently, she just finished a month-long backpacking trip through Europe. But we'll get there in a second. Rachel, say hi to the audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi. You covered a lot of it. I just graduated from Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, and now I'm back home in Buffalo working at a craft local distillery, and I really love outdoorsy stuff. I'm traveling, snowboarding, kind of stuff.
All right, cool. Well, I wish I could say I work at a distillery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we'll get to the travel here in a second, but first I want to mention that Rachel actually won a few BEF scholarships while she was at Duquesne University. Could you talk about that real quick?
Yes, I won the Bonnie Estrangio Scholarship 2 years in a row, and that helped me a lot get through school, and it really helped ease like the financial burden of going to school on me and my family and just all that stuff. It was really great.
So yeah, if you want to apply, if you have cystic fibrosis, you're going to college, and or if you are a parent of a child with CF who's going to college, you can apply for the Boomer Esiason Foundation scholarships at Esiason.org. There's a number of different scholarship programs, and we'd like to award as many winners as we can. And if you, like Rachel, if you already won once, that doesn't mean you can't win again. So keep applying, and we will help you through your path through college. All right, so Rachel just got back from a month-long backpacking trip through Europe, which is probably the boldest thing I've ever heard a CF patient do, because I don't think I could ever do that. All right, so let's first go. We'll start from the beginning here. What made you decide that you wanted to backpack through Europe or go on, you know, some crazy trip after college?
Well, I've always loved traveling and always wanted to travel, and I've had like this little savings account since I was little and always referred to it as my travel fund. So it's always been like something on the back of my mind, like just wanted to do a big traveling adventure. And it was actually one of my best friends who approached me and said, I want to backpack after school. Once we graduate, do you want to come with me? And I said, absolutely.
No hesitancy.
And then I thought about it for a second and I was like, as long as we can accommodate me doing my best and everything. And she's like, absolutely. So that was about a year ago. And we just started planning and made it happen.
Okay, so now what countries did you end up going to?
We went to Iceland, Germany, Poland, Hungary, Italy, Switzerland, and France.
Okay, so that's quite the journey there. Now, do you speak any of those languages?
Not really.
Okay.
I took a semester of French in college, and my friend Kelsey, who I went with, took French for a while. So in Switzerland and France, we were okay, but in some of the countries, it was a little difficult.
All right, so now let's talk about how you prepared travel, like, you know, your medications and all your equipment for travel. What steps did you take to really make sure that not only you felt comfortable, but your parents, your friends, your family, the whole thing?
Mm-hmm. It took a lot of planning, especially with the medications, to make sure that I could order a month's worth, because some of the medications I only get 1 month at a time. So I had to make sure that I ordered it couple days before I left so that I had enough to take me through the whole trip. And so that took a lot of planning and just a scheduled ordering system. And then Hillrom was very helpful. I called them and I got a European cord for the vest. So I didn't have to use an adapter or anything. I just could plug it right in.
Oh, that is helpful.
That was awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah. And what else? I made sure I had a backup, like the aerobica I had with me, just to make sure that if anything were to happen to the vest, which it did, then I could have some sort of backup. I also brought my inhalers in case, because I usually use nebulized albuterol, so like in case my peri trek broke, mm-hmm. then I had backups. And yeah, that was pretty much it.
I think having
did you ever have any hesitancies as you were packing, and like did your support system, like your family, did anyone express concerns, and how did you handle that?
Oh, absolutely. I had so many dreams of like forgetting all my medication and like getting there and being like, oh no, like I don't have albuterol or something like that. But there were times where I was just like, I can't do this. Like, it's a whole month away from my family, like constant travel. What if something happens? What if I catch a cold? Like, all of that stuff absolutely crossed my mind. And my family too was, you know, they were worried, but they never really showed it too much because they wanted me to do it. And so they were more helpful. Like when I did express those concerns, they're like, you can absolutely do it. And they would refer to my sister who, I think she was 19 or 20 and she went to Tanzania and Kenya in Africa. And they're like, Catherine,
very adventurous family.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. So they were like, Catherine did it. Like, you can do it too. And so that was really helpful. And to look at my sister and see that she's done so much and traveled so much, it was definitely helpful to see her have done that.
So you spoke about having backups in place. The last time I went to Europe, I think I went to two countries. I didn't go to like 15 like you did. I went to Norway and Sweden. We actually have some family living in Norway, so that's why we went over. Probably 6 or 7 years ago, and the first day we were there, we actually blew one of the nebulizers. So, but luckily we packed a travel neb, like for just in case something like that happened. And that's sort of how we learned our lesson of how not to trust the converters, because the electricity converters are obviously the big hurdle that I think Americans have to get over when they go to Europe, and obviously when Europeans come to the U.S. because there's the electricity is just, you know, I'm not a scientist, but it's different for some reason. And I think ultimately that was the big mental block that we sort of faced when my family went over to Europe. And of course we were confronted with that. It was almost like moment one. We got off the airplane, got to the hotel, and I, you know, fired up the nebulizer and it blew like 2 seconds in. So for the rest of the 10 days or 11 days that we were there, I was using the travel neb, you know, that little portable nebulizer. And like, I think it's the paratrack, like you said, you had. And I think, that was my biggest concern. So I think ultimately, if you do want to travel, like you said, you have to plan for backups. But now, did you like talk about this with your doctor or anyone like that?
Yes. Yeah, I talked to them about it, and I had already had planned to like go on a biking trip where I wasn't going to bring my vest. It didn't end up working out to go on that trip, but that's when I got the aerobica and the peri trek. So they had already kind of prepared me to go on a trip where I might potentially not have a vest or like, so that I already had those backups.
So what kind of advice did your care team give you?
They told me to seek out CF care centers everywhere that I went, and also just to be careful, wear my masks on the airplanes, and just try to stay on top of everything as best as I could.
So can you tell us more about how you sought out those different CF care centers, like how you found them and what that was like in different countries and cultures?
Yeah, the CF Foundation website was really helpful. And then just Googling different care centers, I didn't actually have to call any of them until I got to Switzerland when my vest broke. And I tried calling them, and it was late at night, and nobody spoke English. I'm like, parlez-vous anglais? Like, anybody who speaks English? Like, I need help. I need to, like, see if they had a vest that I could borrow, or not borrow, but come in and use, or, like, if I should go through the emergency room to get chest PT or just anything. But I had no luck there. They, Switzerland was a little less English friendly. and then when I got to France, we tried calling the American University there. And there, with the language barrier, it was also really hard to get anything. But I had some family in France who offered to take me to the hospital. But at that point, the aerobica was doing its job, so I didn't really feel the need to go into the hospital. But it was pretty challenging to, like, talk to them on the phone. It didn't end up being too helpful. But
so now, how far into the trip were you when this happened? Like, were you sort of towards the beginning, the end, the middle? Where was it when it happened?
It was luckily our second to last country, so I only had 4 days left on the trip.
So I guess that's not too bad. Now, right, as far as, like, feeling comfortable about what happened, what sort of steps or process did you did you take to, as far as getting in touch with Hillrom, or what did you do there?
I called Hillrom and I had them deliver a vest so that it would be ready as soon as I got home. So, like, I pulled up to my driveway on Tuesday, and it was sitting there for me, and so that was good, because then I could do it right away. And then also, I taught my friends how to do chest PT. So I had two of my friends with me in Switzerland, and they both were more than willing to learn it. And so we watched some YouTube videos, and, like, I taught them what I knew, at least from my parents doing PT on me and getting it at the hospital. So, I mean, it obviously wasn't as good as a professional, but it definitely helped a lot. So that was...
YouTube is the world's educator.
What was that?
YouTube is the world's educator.
It's true. Yeah, there's professionals of all sorts.
So now it sounds like you basically had, certain fallbacks in place to, if something went wrong, and obviously something did go wrong with the vest, you were able to sort of rely on other pieces of treatment and care. But, obviously beyond the little setback that you had there, how did you manage your care day in and day out while you were on the move so frequently?
I just made it my number one priority. I made sure that I had time to do my vest. Like, if we were taking an overnight train, I'd get to the train station 2 hours early so that I could find a spot, plug my vest in, and do it. Like, I just, when it was
right,
time
right
to do
the middle,
my vest,
right in the middle of everyone.
Did it. Yes. Wherever I was, I just did it because I knew that I had to. And if I wanted to finish out the trip and make it, I had to make my health my number one priority. So, yeah, it was just a matter of knowing what I had to do and just doing it wherever I could.
Have you always been, like, super open about your treatments, like doing them in front of other people, or was this a new thing for you?
It was way new for me. Like, my close friends have seen me do treatments, and that's probably it. Like, it was a hurdle to overcome the, like, shyness I have about it. So it was weird doing it in public.
What did you do to overcome the shyness, as you put it?
Friend Kelsey helped a lot, just, like, being there next to me and, like, talking to me and joking around with me, so I could just kind of be in my own space and not worry about everyone else, because she was there to kind of just distract me, I guess, from everything.
It sort of seems like it became a running joke, almost, the way you're talking about it. I mean, you're giggling here back and forth. I've also read some of your blog, and it sort of seems like that was, like, the reoccurring theme of the trip was doing treatments in public.
Yeah. It was like, it was kind of funny because, especially like in, Austria, we had a layover, a train layover in Austria, and people were coming over to me and they didn't speak much English at all. They were pointing at it and going like, washing machine? Like, no, respiratory therapy machine, which definitely
no one has any idea what that means. Yeah.
So, yeah, just little things like that. It just kind of did become a joke between me and my friend, like just watching other people react a little bit to it.
That's interesting. I mean, I don't think I've ever actually done my treatments in a grand public setting. I've obviously done them in front of my friends for basically my entire life, but I don't think I've ever done them in a grand public setting like that. So that's definitely something that I think it would have to be overcome. I mean, Julia, have you ever done that, Julia?
Yeah, I've had to do nebulizers in the airport before. And it's a fascinating experience just to see the different reactions you get. I love little kids, like, because they'll just walk right up to you and be like, what are you doing? You know? But it is a hurdle to overcome. It can be really uncomfortable and daunting, like, to just, but it's like a, it's, you just got to do it. You got to get over it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty wild. So okay, I'm like fascinated by your organization here of how you managed to have everything in place for the month. What are some tips or tricks here? Did you sterilize your equipment as you went on, or did you go with travel nebulizers for the month? I mean, travel neb cups for the month, or what did you do as far as your organization in carrying everything, and how much did it all weigh?
Oh, a lot. my backpack was about 35 pounds with all my medicine and everything. And then the vest, I don't know how much that was, but I used my normal nebulizers. Mm-hmm. And then every time we were in a place where I had a stove, I boiled them.
Uh-huh.
And then always made sure that I left whatever place we were staying with clean nebs so that I could do them wherever.
Uh-huh.
So like they were always sterile when I left a destination. And then what other questions did you have?
Basically, how did you organize it like all within like carrying it around?
Yeah, I had everything pretty much in my backpack. I had a little cube. It's called a packing cube. It's like this big, and that held my clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So then the rest of my backpack was medicine. So a lot of Ziploc bags.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the things fit in my vest bag, like the cord, the tubes, all of that stuff, the portable like vest bags. And so my nebulizers went in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then my backup nebulizer went in my backpack.
So did you make sure it was always with you whenever you were, obviously you flew at some point, you weren't just taking the train, but did you make sure that, like, did you carry it on the airplane with you? How did you manage all that?
Yeah, my vest is always a carry-on, even if I'm, no matter where I'm going, it's always right with me.
Mm-hmm.
That's my most important piece of luggage. At one point, on my first flight from Toronto to Iceland, they didn't have enough room for my backpack in the overhead. So my vest went up first. I wasn't parting with that, but then they wanted to take my backpack. So I'm frantically like taking out all my medicine from my backpack. Probably weighed like 10 pounds after that. And I like put them on my friend's back, like carry on. And then they took my backpack and checked it at the gate. So I knew they weren't going to lose it because it was being checked right there, but I still didn't want to take the risk.
Yeah, I mean, you can never put the medicine below,
yeah,
the cabin.
Yeah.
It's just like, you just can't do that.
Yeah.
I want to know if you would do it again, like now that you have hindsight of all that the trip entails, would you do it again?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a life-changing experience, and I met so many incredible people, and just, it was a pain with all my medicine and everything. At times I just was frustrated, but it was so worth it. Like, I'm so glad that I did it, and I would absolutely do it again.
So now if you were going to talk to like somebody with CF that was going to sort of, backpack for a month or take an extended trip like you did, what did you learn from the experience that you'd pass on?
Definitely prepare as much as you can. But also be aware that there are certain things you can't prepare for, and you're just going to have to deal with those things as they come. And
like what?
Like, I didn't have, I had my, one of my medicines that goes in the fridge, and the Airbnb fridge was turned up too high, and so some of it froze. So I was like, okay, I can't use that anymore. So I was like, I was short like 4 or 5 vials of it. So I just had to, you know, kind of deal with that and just figure out something else to do instead of it. Or
I mean, that's definitely, that's like a real significant hurdle. I think, you know, I mean, ultimately you have to ask yourself, like, you know, from, I guess, you know, prior experiences that I've sort of been into where something like that sort of happened, you know, you have to sort of, you know, get over that and put it behind you, and I think just continue on to the finish line. You know, I think ultimately you don't want to look at the end of the trip like it is a finish line, but you also do want to understand that, I think, you know, you have to sort of make it, you have to make it to a point where, you know, you can continue to be healthy. And you mean you still look, you look and sound great. Like you know, you came through it in pretty decent health. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately I think that's like the most important part, that you obviously had like a, you know, a great lifetime experience, and you made a great memory for yourself. But at the end of the day, you were able to, you know, be accountable for every single responsibility, which in the world of CF is like, you know, that's a mind-blowing thing about how difficult it can be for people with CF to plan ahead for such a long extended period of time and also maintain a, you know, a high quality of life. No one's going to say anything after that? Okay. okay, so now we'll take that in a different direction, I guess. unless anyone wants to comment on that. I do think... I've always said that, you know, the reason that we do our treatments and, you know, make sure we are so compliant and understanding, you know, the intricacies of CF care is so that we give ourselves the opportunity to have, you know, these great lifetime moments and memories. Because ultimately, you know, it's a pain in the ass to do all the stuff that we have to do. And, you know, the ultimate goal at the end of the day is to, you know, basically live with, you know, without it being such a hurdle that we have to overcome. And I do think that, you know, going on trips like this is something, well, I don't think I would ever do that because it just terrifies me. It is something that, you know, I think you've proven to yourself and other people with CF that it can be done. You know, where do you think the courage in it came from? Or did you just kind of like jump off the ledge and just go for it?
I kind of just went for it. I was, of course, scared and nervous and had so many doubts. But I was like, why am I convincing myself that I can't do it when I haven't even tried to do it? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm going for it. And whatever goes wrong, I'll just handle it. And if I need to come home early or whatever, at least I tried. At least I went for it and did it. So I kind of went in with the mindset that, like, yes, things are probably going to go wrong. Nothing ever goes right on a month-long backpacking trip. So I was like, things are going to go wrong, and I'm as prepared as I can be, and it's just time to do it, because I knew it was something I wanted to do. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go with my best friend. And so the courage just kind of came from me really wanting to do it. And my family definitely gave me the encouragement I needed to just go for it.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Now, what was your favorite part of the trip?
My favorite part of the trip? Oh, it's so hard. There's so many. I went paragliding in Switzerland.
Again, oh, something I would never do.
So we went like up into the mountains, and it was actually, we started in France and then we paraglided over the French-Swiss border, and you could see the mountains and you could see Geneva and the lake and everything, and it was so beautiful, and you're just kind of like hanging out in the sky with parachute, and it was so beautiful and really cool.
Okay, so obviously it takes a certain type of person to do all of this.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'm that kind of person. okay, so We're sort of running out of time here. I want to make sure you have the last word. Is there anything, you know, you'd like to say to somebody, that could be, I know we sort of talked about it, but someone that could be thinking about doing this, or do you have any organizational tips that you could do? And obviously you have your blog that you kept while you were away. So I want to, give you a chance to talk about that real quick.
Yeah. My blog kind of chronicles everything that went on in the trip, like specific things that we did and things that I encountered, and like you said, pictures of me doing my best in weird places. So that has some advice on it of what to do. And one main thing of how I made it through is that I didn't feel like I had to do everything all the time. And my friend was really good about just taking it easy sometimes. And like a whole month, there's going to be days where you don't feel so great. That's just the nature of cystic fibrosis. And so there were days where I just needed to take it easy and not see every site that day. And so like, if you are going to travel, don't feel like you have to do everything every day. Just take it one day at a time, and but absolutely do it, because it's so worth it to have these experiences. And even if traveling isn't your thing, there's other life experiences that are similar in nature of, we might think that you can't do it, but once you try, you'll realize that with preparation and like just the right support system, you can absolutely accomplish.
Cool. So what is next for you?
Next for me, I'm going to work in Buffalo for a little bit, and then I'm hoping to head out to Colorado at some point. So cool. That's my main goal, and definitely do some traveling in between.
All right, cool. Well, thank you for joining. We definitely look forward to hearing from you again. Again, this is Rachel Russell, 23 years old with CF, and she just completed a backpacking trip through Europe, and she went paragliding in France and Switzerland, something I would never do. But she recommends it, so take her advice on that. I will definitely link to your blog. But that's all the time we have for today. Again, thanks for tuning in for the 44th episode of Making It Matter. Remember, you can follow along with our weekly podcast via my YouTube channel on GunnarSize.com or JuliaRay.com. You can also follow us on iTunes or Instagram. The Instagram is
MakingItMatter_CF.
Hopefully Rachel will give us a few photos that we can put on the Instagram. Definitely want to get the word out there. Also, if you do listen to us on iTunes, like, share, and review. That's very important for some reason. And if you want to see us podcast about something specific, you can always send us an email or get in touch with us like Rachel did. And we want to really shine a light on some fantastic things people with CF are doing. And I think Rachel did a great job of explaining why travel and making life, life experience is so important in the life of someone with CF. The way to do that is you can get in touch with us at my email address, which is gunnersblog@asiacin.org, or Julia's fantastically original email address,
JuliaRay@JuliaRay.com.
Or you can send either of us a message on Facebook. We do that. Slide into the DMs. Always good to do that. In fact, I think Rachel slid into my DMs not too long ago. I think that's how this worked out. The DMs are open. So make sure you do that. Rachel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And
thank you so much.
This is Gunnar Sison and Julia Ray signing off.
Bye, everyone.